Issue.
Welcome back to The Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldeen. Now, for the next 12 minutes before we break for Isha, we are going to have two more guests. We have Professor Wahida Amin. She's a UCT professor in law and she's in studio. Her specialization is in family law, gender, religion, and legal pluralism. Shoo! Yo, Wahida, what happened there? Pluralism. There's a lot of L's there. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, Yazid.
She's going to be joining me in studio. The one person is didn't feel scared to come in studio tonight. But also, we know other people are busy doing other things like German, whatever. Sheikh, Assalamu alaikum. Sheikh Fakhruddin Uwais is an Islamic scholar, no stranger to my show. Sheikh, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Burning Issue.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Maybe I should say welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Mm-hmm. So, Sheikh and Wahida, as we heard during our previous two interviews, both women said, and they talked about religious leaders, and Nuran, for example, talked about how women go to an imam, and Jamila said, for example, that religious leaders are not part of a category of people who need or who should be obliged to report cases of abuse. But now I'm going to ask a very simple question to both my guests, and we can start with Wahida. And the question is this: are victims of gender-based violence being failed by religious leaders? What is your opinion on that, Wahida?
Yazid, I'm going to start off with a very short response. Yes, I think they are being failed. Now, why do I think they're being failed? We know that there are many instances, firstly, where women go to the imams, the sheikhs, the molanas, whoever it is that posits themselves as these authorities, religious authorities within the community, and that the community accepts as their religious leaders, seeking assistance from abuse within their homes, abuse by their husbands, abuse that are being perpetrated by family members. And most, more often than not, they get told, you must sabr, go back, reconcile, make it work, because divorce is frowned upon. Now, when you send a woman back into an abusive situation or into an abusive relationship, you are in fact contributing to the perpetuation and the furtherance of her abuse. And you're not just contributing to her abuse. If there are children involved, you are actually contributing to the abuse of children. What is the messaging that religious leaders are conveying when they do that? They are saying that you should not be talking about this. It must be swept under the carpet. Maintain the honor of your family, maintain the honor of the community. And that's the messaging that gets conveyed to the victims of the abuse, the women and the children. And then of course the children internalize that and grow up with that messaging. I mean, I know that I come from that context where it wasn't deemed acceptable, and it wasn't explicitly said, but this was the culture that was inculcated in our communities over generations, that you don't talk about sex, you don't talk about unwanted attention, right?
So Sheikh Fakhruddin, have you heard what Wahida had to say?
Yes.
Yeah, you've been listening. But like, do you agree with what she's saying? I mean, you are regarded as an Islamic scholar. You obviously advise people who come to you for advice. If a woman who is abused had to come to an imam or a sheikh, I mean, for example, even if they had to come to you, Wahida is saying that there's a culture of sweeping it under the carpet. There's a culture of maintaining the honor of the family. What do you make of all of this?
Yeah, look, I to a large extent, I agree with the sentiments of Wahida. I'm an imam, I'm in the religious sphere, you know, I belong to the ulama fraternity. And to a large extent, she is right. There is a lot of, there's a culture of overemphasis on sabr, There is oftentimes a lack of empathy for what the woman is going through. There is a culture sometimes of cover-up, you know, and the family honor being more important than the suffering of the woman. There is also, the whole thing of blaming the victim sometimes. Okay, what did she do to deserve this? You know, so if a wife comes and she was beaten up by husband or abused, oh yeah, but you know, there's two sides to the story. What was she doing that made him so angry? Now, fine. The thing is, whatever she would have done, it does not justify the abuse and that blue eye and the broken rib and that violence. It doesn't justify it. So the idea that there's two sides to the story, it is not correct in this case. Because whatever she would have, she apparently is guilty of, does not justify the violence. So, yes, I agree that many imams, again, I won't generalize, there are those who do empathize and sympathize and support, but many out there are definitely guilty of covering up these issues and not standing by women. So unfortunately it's a sad reality and for that there needs to be some re-education, there needs to be some change in some of the curriculums that we are taught that we need to support our women, we need to take their side. In the recent case that happened as well, people were like, you know, I would hear some of the ulama say, some again, not all, some of the ulama say things like, where's the proof? And I'm like, what proof do you want? Was the girl supposed to video record her own rape or her own abuse? You know, she didn't record it. Mm-hmm. Here's a person coming out with such courage to say what happened after so many years. I mean, I can understand how much courage it requires to say something like that about your own grandfather or your own whoever. And now we're saying, where's the proof?
Yeah.
And so I don't agree with those attitudes. And to conclude, me as a counselor, I always take a very firm stand against abuse. I do not treat sabr. If I see a woman with a blue eye, I tell her, go and report it to the police. Mm-hmm. But this is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. I must say, what you are revealing this evening is some might consider controversial, because you're essentially saying that the religious fraternity is in fact contributing towards the abuse of women. Wahida, is there something you'd like to add?
Not all of them, right? I'm saying yeah. it's widespread, but it's not everyone.
Widespread sounds like a lot. Yeah. Widespread sounds like a lot. May I just say that?
I think let's not gloss over. I mean, I don't think we are glossing over, but let's not. You know, certainly there may be isolated instances of religious leaders who, as Uwais has said, actually do. Show empathy and are not wanting to sweep the abuse under the rug. But, you know, within our communities, this is a pandemic, mm-hmm. if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually want to say that beyond just re-education and training, the fundamental problem we're sitting with is a religious clergy and a religious leadership, as they call themselves, that is underscored by an institution of patriarchy. That patriarchy is institutionalized within our communities, within the religious leadership. That institution of patriarchy is what needs to be dismantled. And we can't be having these piecemeal, if I can put it, handouts. There were some people calling for more women in the religious leadership, right? No, that's not what is at issue here. What is at issue is that you can bring women into the leadership and you can have them being controlled by the male authorities. And you can have the women coming into these religious leadership positions who, in fact, also contribute to the perpetuation of abuse. So we need to be dismantling the institutions and rebuilding them with women and men in occupying equal spaces. within these institutions.
Yeah. So I think what's very important for us is to understand, of course, the religious response, right? Now, I have only, unfortunately, 2 minutes left before we need to break for Ishai. And we actually hear from people saying that there are some, you know, people who use hadith of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to advise victims of abuse to show forgiveness and to be patient, with what they are dealing with. Now, Sheikh, is this in fact a correct Islamic approach?
No. Patience is a virtue, and both husbands and wives need to be patient with each other. That's a given. But there is a limit to what you are supposed to be patient with. Abuse is not from one of those things for which you need to be patient with. Sometimes your husband gets angry, okay, sabr. You know, sometimes your wife loses her temper, fine, has sabr. These things, we require sabr, we require forgiveness. But if your husband is beating you, your husband is abusing you, your husband is constantly swearing at you, your husband is, you know, committing all these types of, I'm not even going into issues of sexual molestation and marital rape and those type of, I mean, those are crazy stuff, you know. These things do not require sabr. These are crimes, and crimes should be treated as crimes. And a woman has to be saved in such a situation. She doesn't need to be put back into it. The Prophet ﷺ, I mean, we're talking about the beloved Prophet ﷺ, he's the one who said, the best of you are those, you men are those who are best to their women. And he's also the one, when a woman came to him and said, Ya Rasulallah, I'm unhappy with my husband. My father forced me to marry him, and I don't want to be with this man. He didn't tell her, just go sabr with your husband and whatever. He called the man, and he asked the woman to return the mahar, and he annulled the marriage. Today, if a woman goes and wants a fasakh or an annulment of an abusive marriage, sometimes they had to wait for months. And in that month, she's continuously being abused. You don't know what can happen in those months. So the Prophet ﷺ annulled it right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel that is the prophetic example that is being followed. It's a misunderstanding of the concept of forgiveness and sabr.
Yeah. Let's go for the Ishai break. When we come back, we'll hear more from Wahida and also from the Sheikha. Yeah. Welcome back to The Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldi. Now, this evening's topic is actually quite a biggie. Guys, listeners, this topic feels quite big, okay? We are talking about gender-based violence, and we've now gotten to the part of the conversation where we are talking and questioning whether religious leaders are failing victims of gender-based violence. We have heard from our two guests who both agree that religious leaders can do a better job in terms of helping victims of gender-based violence. Our guest in studio is Professor Wahida Amin, and she's a UCT professor in public law. And we also have online Sheikh Fakhruddin Uwaisi, an Islamic scholar. Sheikh Fakhruddin, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just checking if you're on the line. So I think what's very important for us to talk about is, of course, we've laid the foundation and we've said, yes, you know, the Muslim clergy could do better, the religious leaders could do better in terms of helping victims of gender-based violence and sexual abuse. And this, of course, is in a context where more of these stories are emerging, particularly on social media. We are seeing more stories like that now. I also just want to say that we are receiving a number of WhatsApp messages, quite a lot actually, on this topic. And I just want to acknowledge some of that, because listeners do play an important role in our show as well. Let's go through some of the messages. Listener 0115 has a message for Wahida, and the listener says, Yazid, how can you allow Wahida to lambaste the ulama like that? She sounds like a man hater. Wahida, well, is that your response to it? Okay.
Sorry.
May I ask, Wahida, are you a man hater? Do you hate men? What's wrong?
Okay, let me try and
respond. Oh, is that your response, period?
Let me try and respond seriously, okay? No, I'm not a man hater.
I should have made a video of that. That was such a moment.
So, you know, when a person, not just a woman, when a person is calling out wrongdoings in a community and in a family, and especially when that wrongdoing is abuse that's being perpetrated, and we know in society, in South Africa, on the continent, across the world, that abuse is mainly perpetrated by men against women, by males against females. At no point in this show this evening did any one of the panelists, including myself, say that only men perpetrate abuse against women and that only women are abused by men. But the statistics and the reality shows that abuse is mainly perpetrated by men against women, by males against females. We know that women can abuse and men, some men are abused by women and some women do abuse. But that is not the picture of reality as it is on the ground in terms of the majority of abuse that's happening. And if you think, and I'm speaking to that particular listener who called me, who described me as a man-hater. If you think that calling out the truth and highlighting the reality in society makes me a man-hater, then you are delusional, you are short-sighted, you are narrow-minded, and you are completely out of tune with reality as it is. Listener, you are living in a soap opera.
Wow. Okay. I think that really sums it up. I'm not going to go any further into that question. So, you know, Sheikh, something else that listener 0682 has sent is saying that the ulama even use quotations to hush the abuse, right? And the listener is saying that one of the best quotes used is, if you cover your brother's faults, Allah covers your faults on the day of Qiyamah. Now, is there any legitimacy, is there any truth to this?
Yeah, I answered that earlier. Covering faults does not include crimes and abuse. Because here, it's covering faults is if you know you missed your Fajr Salah or did something wrong on a personal level. But if there is another person involved who's a victim who's suffering, if I know Mr. Buta X missed his Fajr Salah, I should cover up that. I shouldn't go announce to the whole world that, because that's wrong. You know, we all have mistakes and errors. But if I know that Buta X is busy molesting his daughter, then here there is another person involved who is suffering. In that case, there is no such thing as covering your brother's fault. In this case, it is saving your sister. It is saving the other person. The Prophet ﷺ said, "La darar wa la dirar." Don't harm anybody and don't let anybody harm you as well. So here we need to save somebody. I mean, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, there's a surah called Surah Al-Mujadila. It means, the literally the name of the surah is, the lady that came arguing. Who did she come argue with? She came to argue with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam about incident that happened at her home. There was no abuse. The husband didn't beat her. He didn't even swear at her or anything like that. What happened was that he desired to have sexual relations with her, and she refused for whatever reason it was. And then what happened next was unacceptable. What he did was, he said, "You to me are like my mother," which was an ancient Arab way of like a talak. To say that when you say to your wife, "You to me are like my mother," that's like making talak to her. So she came to the Prophet ﷺ complaining. She said, "Ya Rasulallah, I spent years of my life with this man, serving him, looking after him, all of that. I'm an old lady now, you know, I'm an older person, and now something small like that happened, and he just unlocked me. So please help me. Now, I'm not going to the whole story, but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala heard the call of this woman and revealed the surah where he says, فَسَّمِعَ اللَّهُ قَوْلَ الَّتِي تُجَادِلُكَ فِي زَوْجِهَا. Allah says to the Prophet sallam, indeed your Rabb has heard the complaint of that woman who came to you arguing about her husband. Allah heard her complaint and Allah gave her the solution after that as well to save her marriage. This lady was also one, you know, in Umar's time, one day she stopped him in the middle of the road and she started giving him a long lecture. And after a while, some of his companions said to Sayyidina Umar, who was the ruler, the Khalifa, that why are you listening to this woman's long lecture? I mean, you got other things to do. He said, guys, do you know who this woman is? This is the woman whose complaint was heard by the Almighty Allah himself. So how can Umar not listen to her? So when somebody is suffering, you need to listen to them. You need to help them out. God listened to the woman who was suffering. We cannot use other things like cover up your brother and so on. It doesn't apply in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Let's go for a quick ad break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. Welcome back to The Burning Issue. We are almost at the end of our program, and I just want to acknowledge some of the WhatsApp messages that have come through. Listener 7107 says, shukran for having this program. We need the frank discussion. Listener 4962 says, the person who called the sister man-hater is part of the problem. The problem being systemic misogyny and male patriarchy. And the listener also asks, the ulama should pass a fatwa that if there's abuse, no reconciliation is possible until the perpetrator is rehabilitated. That is a question, actually. Can the ulama pass a fatwa? And then listener 4616 presents an opinion saying, our ulama lacks personal skills. I guess that's supposed to be interpersonal skills. They go and study, but don't have a clue how to act with human beings. Of course, that is one person's opinion. We all have different interactions with our religious leaders. And then I received a message from a woman that I feel really needs to be shared. And I just want to find it because if I can just quickly find it where it was. Sure. There are so many messages. Listeners, by the way, shukran for all your interaction on the show this evening. I know that for a lot of people in our community, it's a contentious issue. Okay, well, I see the listener actually deleted all her messages. I do remember that she was saying, she was just basically sharing some of the abuse that she's been through. And I think some people take to social media because they feel so frustrated in this situation, they have nobody else to turn to. And that's, of course, where we started off the show, with people who have turned to social media. Now, Sheikh, I just quickly want to ask your advice on this. Now, we are aware that there are also members of the ulama who do not condone naming and shaming of alleged sexual abuse perpetrators in the public space, unless they have been tried in court. And that's even an ethical thing that we follow as journalists, because the South African law states that you are innocent until proven guilty. But now, is there an ethical and perhaps religious dilemma with what people are doing, which is taking to social media to out or to expose an alleged sexual abuse perpetrator? Give us guidance on this as well from an Islamic perspective, because, you know, nothing really stops anyone from going onto Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and posting pictures of someone, and we're seeing it more now, and making allegations against them of very defamatory of a defamatory nature sometimes, without really going to court and all those things. And I mean, this is the other side of the coin. You know, we need to understand both sides of what the implications are.
Yes, definitely. And this is obviously one of the most sensitive issues when it comes to this matter. You know, the whole issue of innocence and guilt Is the person considered guilty until proven innocent, or are they considered innocent until proven guilty? And this is where people disagree. A lot of women, they go with the first opinion. If he's been accused, then he's guilty until you prove that he's innocent. A lot of men go on the other opinion. No, he's innocent until you prove he's guilty. I personally promote a middle way approach to this matter, which is that, yes, you cannot declare somebody completely guilty and become the judge, the jury, the executioner, unless due process is followed and there is substantial evidence of guilt. Just an accusation alone doesn't automatically make a person guilty. So we cannot assume that person is certainly guilty just because they've been accused of something. So that would become a travesty of law. I mean, I could accuse you, you could accuse me, anybody could accuse anyone, and that's not good, you know. And we've had cases, not many maybe, but there have been cases in some parts of the world. I've read in the USA and some places where some women accuse certain people, ex-husbands and stuff, of stuff just out of spite. And it's been proven to be false as well. But at the same time, I'm against also this approach of considering the person completely innocent and taintless until you go through an entire procedure and is found to be guilty. Because in this case, what happens is the person is just left to go free, and there is no accountability. So we need to take an approach where such a person, I don't have a problem in naming them, shaming them, maybe not, depending, but cases need to be brought forward. Why am I saying this? Is because this is a very sensitive matter. It takes women a lot of courage to come out with these matters, especially if they are younger, especially if they are members of the family. And one of the reasons many women don't come out is because they feel people are going to think I'm lying. People are not going to believe me. People are going to think I'm making this up. And I don't have anything else to prove it. I don't have any witnesses. Nobody recorded this. And people are going to say stuff like, why are you coming out now after so many years? So therefore, I think these cases need to be highlighted. And yes, you can put a disclaimer there that, look, the charges are still being investigated. They are still at court. But this is happening. The person has been accused. That's a fact. The person has been accused, and we need to highlight that. Otherwise, we're going to silence victims. We're going to shame them and make them look like liars, and the abuse will continue. And the abuse is real, and it is happening. So we need to mention names. We need to highlight what's happening. And yes, we can say, look, the matter is still being investigated, but this is happening and these accusations have been made.
Yeah.
So people are aware of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Sheikh, I think I'm going to wrap up my interview with you because we have just a few more minutes to go. So shukran so much for joining us on Burning Issue this evening.
Awesome. Thank you for the invitation.
Shukran. Wahida, we have just a few more minutes. The floor is yours. I also still want to read out the resource list.
Okay. Thanks, Yazid. I think I just want to make a few final points. I've already spoken about the fundamental problem of institutionalized patriarchy, and that this kind of that institution needs to be dismantled and replaced with progressive voices of men and women occupying equal spaces within leadership structures, including religious leadership structures. But I also want to talk about the obligation. So what we saw after the allegations were made was, were religious leaders coming out and making statements. Now, this kind of seems to be the modus operandi, where after the fact, a statement gets made and conduct and behavior gets condemned. And that's all good and well, but it's not enough. Because it's very easy to condemn conduct after the act has already been perpetrated. What are religious leaders doing and should be doing to address abuse and to ensure that they facilitate an environment that prevents abuse from being perpetrated? Now, the one thing I think is very interesting is the the identification of religious leaders as people who dispense advice and provide counseling. And that, and when someone like that is not trained to dispense advice and to dispense counseling, that becomes very worrisome for me. And I think we need to start holding those people accountable, firstly, that when abuse is reported to them, it cannot be swept under the rug, firstly. And they need to, if they're not trained properly themselves, they need to be referring the victims or the survivors of abuse to the relevant agencies that are equipped and have expertise to deal with it.
So just for a point of clarity, so I mean, my understanding of counseling is that it is a confidential relationship, firstly. So I'm going for counseling, I'm seeking advice. So it's not to say that I, as a religious leader or whoever the religious leader, sorry, I'm just using, it's not to say that the religious leader is compelled to take your hand and take you to a police officer, but maybe advise you rather to go to these resources.
Absolutely.
So we're not saying the onus is on that religious leader to now go and...
Yeah. So I think we must make a distinction between legal obligations and moral obligations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, at the moment, there's no legal obligation on a religious leader when a instance of abuse has been reported to him, right? One should also be able to say her, but we know that the reality is that most of them are males. So, and that for me is also problematic. And also the reporting of the abuse is in the case of minors. You would need an adult's consent to report abuse. But the Sexual Offences Act doesn't place the obligation on a religious leader to do so in the case of a minor. And for me, that's a gap in the law that that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. You have like a minute.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Obviously, safe spaces need to be created.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to start thinking through the roles and responsibilities of religious leaders in these kinds of cases where abuse is happening, where abuse gets reported, what needs to be done to prevent, to address and prevent abuse. And I just want to reiterate, religious leaders, if abuse is being reported to them, right, cannot take the approach and say, sweep it under the carpet, don't talk about it, don't create shame. Right. If they are trained in counseling and therapy, you know, provide the advice that is needed there, but refer the victims to the appropriate spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think your input this evening has been really brilliant, and shukran also for the little bit of humor, Waida. Shukran for joining us. I would like to firstly thank you, but then also before I greet, just leave our listeners with a bit of a resource list. There are a number of organizations that are at hand to help. I can't read out all of it, but I'll leave you with two numbers. There's Rape Crisis, and they are on 021-447-1467. That is Rape Crisis. You can also Google them. And another one is called NACOSA, and they are on 021-552-0804. I'm going to have to leave it at that due to time constraints. Waida, shukran so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Afwan Yazid. Could I request that list of service providers be made available on the website so people can access it if
definitely,
they need?
Definitely. There's a Facebook page and there's a Voice of the Cape website. I'll make sure that, I mean, I'll relay the message to the show producer. From myself, Yazid Kamaldin, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.